The high-level committee looking at simultaneous elections in India has just submitted its report. It's a massive report running into thousands of pages with consultations from key stakeholders, citizens, former Supreme Court judges, chief election commissioners, political parties, economists, among others. The report proposes, well, in the first step, simultaneous elections for parliament and state legislative assemblies. In a second step, elections to municipalities and panchayats will be held within 100 days of parliamentary and state legislative assembly elections. This will need to be ratified. There'll now be a single electoral roll and photo identity card for use in all elections. If there is a no confidence motion or a hung house, elections will be held for the remaining term of this house. That's important. 32 parties have favored simultaneous polls. 15 parties have opposed simultaneous elections. But simultaneous polls were held, by and large, till 1967. The process was disrupted after that. Frequent elections add to additional expenditure. The present system results in economic uncertainty and also an element of instability. It disrupts government machinery. And there is also the issue of voter fatigue, which is why this panel feels that it's time for simultaneous elections in India. Well, joining us now, S.Y. Qureshi, former Chief Election Commissioner of India, Salim Dharanidharan, National Spokesperson of the DMK, R.P. Singh, National Spokesperson of the BJP. I'm also joined by Sanjay Jha, he's a political analyst, Neeraj Chaudhary also with us. Thank you all very much. Mr. Qureshi, let me come to you first. One of the arguments which has been raised is that if we have just one set of elections in this country, then representatives of the central leadership tend to hold sway over local sentiment, local politics, and effective representatives of local voters do not actually end up having the same say. Do you agree?
Yes. In fact, there was a study, I forget the name of the institution, for 20 years, 1999 to 2019, examining the voting behavior in simultaneous election and staggered election. When the elections were simultaneous, 77% voted for the same party as in the center. When it was staggered by 6 months, it dropped down to 61%. When it was more staggered, then of course there was no correlation. Therefore, what you say is absolutely correct, because simultaneous election will benefit the party in power in the center.
Mr. R.P. Singh, would you like to respond to that? Whoever comes to power in the center, whichever political party, has an advantage in state-level elections. Mr. Qureshi mentioning that there's been a study which has actually proven that. Is that what we want in our democracy as opposed to diversity and the choice of voters at local levels?
Well, we are challenging the power of the voter. We are challenging the voting pattern of the voters. What happened in Odisha and what happened in Andhra? I know two states which will go for election even now and parallel to the parliamentary elections. And also, which has happened earlier also.
Right.
Both these states have voted differently in the parliamentary election and differently in the assembly elections. So why are we posing a question mark on the voters' objective? I'm not at all with this that we can challenge the Indian voter and then we can challenge him by saying that you are not mature enough to take a call on which side or which part you are voting for. We are voting for assembly elections or you are voting for the parliamentary elections.
Sure. That's a valid point. I wanted to ask.
Give me a second.
Yeah, go ahead.
And so is the case with the panchayat elections. Panchayat elections are contested on the very local issues. So, when people vote for panchayat, they'll vote differently. I mean, let's see the example of the recent last panchayat election which happened in Jammu Kashmir. And then people voted very differently. Please go through that and then you'll understand the results of the election. You'll understand that people don't vote as per the political agenda. They vote for the local governance in their respective constituency or respective districts.
Mr. Dharanidharan, you know, R.P. Singh has a point when he says, firstly, why should we or anybody second guess voters in the states or in the panchayats? If they choose to vote for the party which comes to power in the center, right, then what's wrong with that? Let them have that choice. How would you respond to that?
I would give a detailed reply on three counts. First, it leads to lesser autonomy, by which even if you look at more homogeneous country and smaller democracies. For example, Germany, the states in Germany, they decide their own election commissioner. They decide their decide on the terms of the election. For example, in Berlin, it's 5-year term for the state government. In Munich, it's 4-year term. It could be vice versa, I'm not sure. Also, the type of democracy also changes. Like some have Westminster system, some have representative democracy. And second is the problem of federalism. I would extend what Qureshi said, right? Research by Emmanuel Bracco and Federico Rivelli showcases that when concurrent elections are held to both provincial and national governments, the less salient, in this case provincial contest, stops affecting the provincial electoral outcomes. So because the national elections have bigger impact, so national issues tend to dominate. And what this would do is, this would make the political parties to give preference to national issues. And the issues that local issues gets affected. And this research was from Italy, where they tried. I'm giving a live example. This is again 20-30 year research, where they said the politicians did not care for the local issues at hand, and they're only looking for the major issues or overall the national issues.
All right, so and local representation and local issues will not work out, is what you're trying to say.
And most importantly, the practicality.
All right.
So what happens if, like, after the independence?
We'll talk about practicality in just a moment, because this entire exercise, some would suggest, is partly to ensure it is more practical. We'll come to that in a moment. Mr. Qureshi, the other point that has been raised is that we need to try and save funds, money, elections are colossally expensive. However, there is a contrarian view as well. This is what another former election commissioner, Mr. Ashok Lavasa, has said. You know, in an article I was reading, he said the total expenditure incurred in the 2019 national elections was 9,000 crores. In other words, about 100 rupees per voter, even if you double this price, right? And considering that there'll be more than just the Lok Sabha national level elections, make it 200 rupees per voter for a period of 5 years. It translates to spending only about 10 paisa per voter per day. Is that too much for us to afford?
Yeah, actually not. India is the largest democracy. It is 90 countries rolled into one. And to conduct the kind of election that we have been doing, of the whole world is proud. So this is a very small price, and this should not be the question and debated. But at the same time, you know, the money being spent by political parties in the campaign is also being discussed. And that is an important issue. And the estimate for that was 60,000 crores,
yes,
by the Center for Media Studies. Whether that needs to be brought down. There also, there are two views. One view is that 60,000 crores going from politicians to the poor people, the money is getting recycled, that's a good thing. They get jobs, it is good for the economy. And secondly, if you really want to bring it down, there is a way. The way is that there is a cap on the expenditure by individual candidates, but there is no cap on political party. So why not put a cap on the political party also, as they have in UK, from where we borrowed the system?
Sure.
Immediately it will come down from 60,000 to 6,000 crores.
Right, and that's a key point as far as cleaning up funding and how political parties actually spend those funds. Nidja, 32 parties favored simultaneous elections, 15 parties opposed it. As I understand it, most opposition parties have said no, they don't want it. What are opposition parties so scared of?
I think that a lot of the reasons have already been pointed out. And one of the compelling reasons that have been cited for going in for simultaneous elections is the use of money. And I think, as has been said already, isn't our democracy too valuable to be weighed against only money?
Okay.
I think that's a question we need to ask.
Can I?
Number two. Nobody's talked about cutting down on expenses. Political parties don't talk about it at all. Why not look at that option? Mr. Qureshi is absolutely right. We only look at the simultaneous election part. We need to go into the merits and demerits of simultaneous election. Of course, the federal principle is involved, readjustment of the practical aspects of it, the readjustment part that, you know, some states will lose their terms, some will gain. Who will decide this? Will there be fair in this decision? Will the Lok Sabha decide this for state assemblies? And suppose a party loses its majority halfway. Do you then in a state assembly do then declare president's rule so that there is a fixed term. Again, a federal principle comes into being.
No, and but if there is a hung assembly, right, or if a government fails, as I understand it, either at the center or at the state level, there will be an election for the remaining term of that government, had it been there, for the remaining term. So right. There will be a fresh election, that also, but that period of 5 years remains.
Yeah, so that, does that, you know, some other party comes to power. So you give that party only 2.5 years. Suppose the government falls midway. I mean, there are many principles involved here. But I agree also on your first point where you said people may vote very sensibly and say, I vote for the panchayat this way, I vote for the assembly this way differently, and I vote for the national government differently. They may well do that. But by and large, in recent times, we've heard people say, look, I want Mr. Modi in the national election. I'm voting Mr. Gehlot here, this time, but national election, I'm going to vote Modi. So that is a choice large number of people exercise. And that is a choice they must be given. Why curtail that choice? So
the counter to that is nobody is curtailing their choice. You're just having elections, you know, at the same time. And, you know, and people get to sort of decide who works for them at all levels.
Of course. I'm not saying there are not merits on the other side. But, you know, I think there are, we are looking at it, you know, we have to go in for one nation, one election. Are we really weighing up?
One second, Sanjay, I know you've been waiting, just bear with me. I wanted to go back to RP Singh for a moment. Mr. Singh, the point that's been mentioned over here is that we spend incredibly, political parties spend incredibly in the process of elections. 50,000 crores, it's more than that. In fact, some reports suggest 60,000 crores. At the moment, here in India, we have elections which work. They are a remarkable process of democracy. Our electronic voting machines work. There is representation of people. Why fix something which isn't broken?
Well, one part is being missed till now. That is the process of the government functioning. When elections are announced, the whole of the process of the development and the government functioning come to halt. And then that is a much bigger loss than the election expenditure. Election expenditure, yes, one need to curtail on the election expenditure, and then need be all parties should come together, and they come together also, but they should come together and decide on how much money one can spend and on what materials and what subjects they can spend. But that point aside, as I said, are we challenging or are we underestimating the voters of the country, the citizens of the country? I mean, I give you two examples. Please give me an example where people have voted into the same party as in the assembly and the parliament together, where the elections are held together. I just gave you two examples, Odisha and Andhra, and then probably this time also, we don't know how people vote, but they decide as per their own assessment of the assembly election and the parliamentary election. Mirja was right saying that people vote differently in Delhi for assembly elections and they vote differently for the parliament election. They give full majority to Arvind Kejriwal when it comes to assembly election. They give all seven seats to BJP when it comes to the parliament election. So let's not underestimate the power of the voter, or let's not underestimate the citizen of the country. And also, the development part is more important. The complete development comes to halt for 2-3 months time every time election is held, and election is on all 5 years. So one state or other state suffers from the development part.
Sanjay, would you like to take on that point, that why stop the process of governance through frequent elections?
I want to make two points, Vishnu. Number one, that the one nation, one poll is inherently anti-federal. And I'll give you two examples. Number one, as people have already mentioned, campaign resources. Take the example of the current political environment. The BJP has the bulk of the money, electoral bonds. And to that extent, it can override the campaign of several regional parties in state elections. The second part is the national parties can create a wave of a pan-India nature. Now, it may be the BJP today, it can be the Congress tomorrow, but this basically favors a personality-driven politics, which is normally going to be prevalent with the national party at a pan-India level. But here is the core point, I think, that we are missing out here, Vishnu, that we are missing the woods for the trees. India should be talking about actually getting its entire election system more efficient and structurally more robust. You have problems today with the entire election commission itself in terms of how the election commissioners are going to be there, because that is now becoming very executive heavy, which is dangerous for democracy. Nobody's talking about it. Point number two, electoral bonds are deemed to be unconstitutional, unethical and illegal. And we all know that this was something that was propagated by the executive in power. Point number three, extremely vital that we cannot ignore here, is suppression of voters. You know, we never talk about it, but many voters find themselves off the rolls, particularly those who belong to the minority community. And by the way, if you can have Chandigarh in today's day and time of live television and social media, where people can actually change votes under the watch of the camera, it tells you that we have a long, long way to go. So I think fundamentally, the crucial point that I think Mr. Qureshi made, electoral bonds are probably just the tip of the iceberg. If 60,000 crores is actually being spent, we are saying that 50,000 crores is probably cash. And if we can't sort that out, then we are basically reconciling to corruption in our public life.
Okay, and so that should be the focus, is what you're saying, not necessarily changing the way we do elections. Mr. Qureshi, is there anything over here? One question, Mr. Qureshi. If a government falls in a system where we have one nation, one election, could there be a situation where a government, where there is an election which lasts only, who knows, which happens just a few months before the scheduled elections? And therefore, doesn't it make the entire system rather unworkable that you have a full-fledged election for a tenure which could just last a few months?
Yes, exactly. In fact, I have only seen the sketchy details of this committee's report. When it will be scrutinized, you'll find lots of flaws in it. For instance, the whole purpose of simultaneous election was to reduce the number of elections. In this case, they proposed more elections. Suppose the government falls in 2.5 years. They say, okay, there will be an election, but only for half the term, which means in the same state where there used to be election once in 5 years, there will be two in 5 years, in the same 5 years. So you are increasing the number of elections. So what purpose does it serve? Second, very funny recommendation is that panchayat election, let them be within 100 days. That is not simultaneous, which means the entire bandobast has to be repeated again, which is a tough job, which is a very difficult job. I don't know exactly what are these recommendations. And 10 years, the whole nation has been debated. Parliamentary Committee, Niti Aayog, Law Commission, they could not find a solution. They could not come to a consensus. And in 3 months, this committee, just because it is high-powered, has come out with some magic wand. I don't know. We will examine it in detail.
Okay. Mr. Dharanidharan, go ahead.
Sir, see, firstly, this is not a new concept. We all know that. It's been there since independence. Only after 1967, when the subnational governments have been dismissed, then this concept, one nation, one poll, was also lost its steam. But listen, from 67 onwards, more than 47 times subnational governments have been dismissed by the president just because the subnational government opposed the union government. My question is, as everyone is saying, what happens if the government dismissed after 4 years or 3.5 years? Are you going to have a party come and rule only for 1.5 years, or have a president's rule? Then if you have president's rule, then it makes more sense for the union government, whichever party in power, to dismiss after 3 years or 3.5 years or 4 years and have a president's rule for a year. That is ruling these days by...
But the point being made is that it won't be president's rule unless, of course, there are extenuating circumstances. There'll be fresh elections.
But what happens if it's after 4 years? Let's say you have election for 1 year. What will the government do?
That's the point that's not explained. And that's the key issue here. Will you have elections for a government for 1 year? Sanjay had a point. One second, Sanjay, go ahead. I'll come back to Mr. Dharanidharan.
You know, Vishnu, I think what we should worry about is free and fair elections. And I'm actually concerned because we know what happened in neighboring Pakistan, right? Where the entire election has been rigged. And if India appears susceptible in the minds of the opposition party, the government or the election commission has to take cognizance of it. I'm astonished that the opposition makes a request to the election commission. They're not saying remove the EVM. They're saying please reconcile that with the VVPAT. It's just to make sure that there is absolutely 100% authenticity on the result. And you have an election commission that is stonewalling that very elementary request. These are signs of panic, in my opinion, that I think should worry everybody in the country. That is the constitutional body that is meant to be independent actually taking a stubborn view of not allowing transparency to happen where every competing political party is feeling confident about the result. These are the fundamental challenges that we should be debating.
All right, Mr. R.P. Singh, last 1 minute to you. Go ahead, sir. You've got your hand raised. Yes.
I'm shocked at the observation of the Mr. Sanjay Jha. When the party has been Karnataka, when the opposition party was Himachal, or when they win other Telangana, everything is very good. I remember Punjab elections, Mrs. Sonia Gandhi was opposing, oh, this is very wrong. And when Mr. Captain Inder Singh came and said, no, we are very okay with the election result. And then we won the elections, so we were okay with the election result. So as it suits, I mean, it's more of the game of suitability than being fair on the election process. And also, people have been challenging election, the EVMs now, because they have started challenging the EVMs. Recently, all parties in the opposition alliance have started challenging the EVM because they know because what is going to be the outcome of the election. And that's why they started challenging the EVM. And also, VVPAT, I mean, there is already VVPAT system for certain level of EVMs. And then one can always check the EVMs for those who have VVPAT, and those can be challenged also. But no, they don't have faith in the system because if they are in opposition, that's why they don't have the faith in the system and they will keep challenging the system. And one more point on the federal part. I mean, how does it challenge the federal structure of the country? I don't understand. I mean, I just now told you people vote as per their wish in different polls. And I just gave you example of Delhi, Odisha and Andhra. They vote as per their wish once we do that, it means we are challenging the voters. We are saying that you are not sensible enough to vote as required as per your.
All right. So let us respect what the voters have to say. And let us not for a moment assume that the voters don't know what they're talking about. I'm afraid I'm out of time on this debate. Mr. Dharanidharan, apologies for that.